ephes problems. Water that becomes trapped behind an ephes system can cause serious moisture-related problems, including mold, mildew, or fungi growth on interior walls, cracked drywall, cracking, peeling, and bubbling paint, ephes cracking and delamination, rotting wood, damage to wall structures, structural failure, increased humidity, insect infestation, respiratory and allergy ailments. In addition to moisture-related problems associated with ephes systems, homeowners have reported the other issues, including diminution of home value, often as high as 20 to 35%, homeowners' policies not being renewed, banks refusing mortgage extensions, and realtors refusing ephes home showings. And that is from a article about how disgruntled owners have filed ephes synthetic stucco lawsuits dated February 18th, 2019 from a law firm that published that. And with that, welcome to House Einstein podcast number 15. You've got a bad case of the ephes. And I am Osman Parvez with House Einstein.
And I'm Hamish Crabb. Pleasure to be here.
Thanks for being here, Hamish. So this is very fresh of mind, this topic, because this past weekend I showed homes in Boulder. And we were looking at this house in a great neighborhood and that would likely work well for this buyer. And this particular buyer was the first client I had that really helped educate me on ephes. This is a long time ago. And it's a testament that 15 years later, we are shopping for a new home here in Boulder. And he's still with us. But we went through the ephes learning curve with him about 15 years ago. And ephes, for those that don't know, stands for exterior insulation finish system, ephes. What is it? How do we end up in these circumstances? What do you do if your home has ephes? Should you buy a home with ephes? All of these topics we're going to cover in this podcast, and hopefully we'll keep it to under an hour. All right, let me pull up our little
outline. And first
off,
this is a entertainment podcast.
Oh, thank you, as always, Hamish. I always forget our CYA.
You've been on it pretty well.
Yeah, well, I mean, I like to get right into it and get to the point. It's just my nature. I don't waste a lot of time. I really like to not belabor what we're talking about. Hamish is right. We do need to mention to you, dear listeners, that this podcast is for entertainment purposes only. And if you are a potential buyer or seller in our local market here in Colorado, we're happy to talk to you. But unless we've already engaged you in a client relationship, then please consider anything we say to be entertainment. And it may or may not be factually true, but you should probably just put it in the entertainment category. And if you're looking for real estate advice, please consult your own real estate agent or realtor and an associated professional, because this is typically a topic that actually is better covered by an inspector. But after doing this for 20 years, I can tell you the real world impacts of ephes and how real estate transactions navigate that process and what to do if you are thinking about buying a home with ephes or have purchased a home with ephes and are thinking about selling it. How do you handle that situation? So Hamish, you just bought a house. Congratulations for entering the world of homeownership.
Thank you. There's a lot.
Homeownership is a lot. Would you have considered buying a home with ephes?
I don't think I would have initially ruled it out. With the limited experience I have with Ephus and kind of doing a quick brush up before this podcast, I'm still not entirely swayed in one direction or the other. I know that there's a lot of due diligence that rolls with it. And with most inspections in Colorado, at least being non-intrusive, it certainly leaves this huge question mark over your head. And I don't know if I'd feel comfortable going into it knowing or not knowing, right, whether or not Ephus has run its damage course or not beforehand. So, if it's compelling enough, sure. Yeah.
Do you feel comfortable with your knowledge of what Ephus is?
I'd say I have a very shallow understanding at this point. And I'm sure as we go further, I'll learn a lot more.
Okay. All right. So let's get into it. What is Ephus? Ephus sometimes is referred to as artificial stucco. And real stucco is usually based in Portland cement and involves a couple of layer process. But the stucco itself is troweled on to usually a metal lattice that is on the outside of your house. And what you end up with is a material that is very stone-like. It's like mortar between masonry. It is very solid. It is fire resistant. Doesn't have much in the way of R value. My guess is the R value or insulation value is zero for true stucco, but it's material that's relatively easy to repair. It's been around a very long time, and it doesn't have any of the same issues as Ephus. Ephus, exterior insulation finishing system, is also a multi-layer process. And what they do is they glue on a foam board on the outside of your house on the substrate. And then that foam board is skim coated with a layer of what looks like stucco. And it's usually a couple of layers that ends with paint. The idea is that the biggest benefit of Ephus is that it adds R value or insulation value to your home on the outside. The downsides are that it can easily trap moisture if it was incorrectly installed or not correctly maintained over time. And as it degrades, the odds of moisture getting stuck behind that foam board increase. And when that moisture's back there, it causes all the bad things, deterioration of the structure itself and potentially moisture problems, huge sheets of Ephus siding falling off the structure. And I personally have negotiated multiple mid to upper two-digit inspection concessions over Ephus that was discovered to be faulty and failing and moisture containing. I've also been on the listing side and had buyers run away from the deal mid-inspection when they realized it was an Ephus containing siding house. In that particular deal, I won't mention the address or the agents involved, but we had already disclosed the home was Ephus because that's what you do. And we had actually proactively addressed the Ephus issues, but the home was being purchased by somebody with family abundance, family wealth, and the family member who was funding the purchase was an insurance executive. And when they realized it was Ephus, they put the kibosh on the deal entirely. And they didn't even go any further. As soon as they figured out it was Ephus, and it had already been disclosed, but the money in the deal, so to speak, was not going to play ball with an Ephus siding house, although the person who put it under contract was in love with it. And it would have worked for them, except for the fact it was Ephus. So I've got horror stories like that. And I've had listing agents, when I'm on the buy side, tell me, don't worry about the Ephus. It's no big deal. And then the inspection reveals that there's faulty Ephus and there's moisture in the wall. And they say, oh, no, that's only $7,000 to $10,000. And I say, uh-huh, sure. We need to extend the inspection resolution deadline so that we can get estimates, and then we'll see what it actually costs. And the actual costs are more like $70,000 to $80,000, 10 times what the wishful thinking listing agent said it would cost. And this particular listing agent, who's very strong in the ego, said, look, my husband works in construction. We've dealt with this many times. It's only $7,000 to $8,000. I'm like, oh, okay, sounds good. Let's extend the deadline and we'll verify. And I'm not going to argue.
Verify.
Yeah. I didn't trust at all. In this case, it was pretend to trust. Our office building is wrapped in Ephus. and has had a multi-million dollar lawsuit over the development because of its poor construction and poor maintenance. But original construction installation was done incorrectly. The flashing was wrong, and it resulted in moisture trapped in the ephus. So, yes, I'm very familiar with it. And it's one of these things where I tell buyers they need to understand ephus and make sure they feel comfortable with what this product is before we write the offer, because there's no point in paying for a specialty ephus inspection, which is what I usually recommend, in addition to the regular home inspection, paying for those things and then start to do your homework about what this product is. Because, yeah, go ahead, Hamish. It could scare the heck out of you.
Well, that's the first thing, right? Is when you asked me kind of what I knew, I didn't even know there was a special ephus inspection. Right. And that, so that, could you go into that? Right.
Oh yeah. There are companies. So a typical home inspection will cover the basics of the house with a lot of CYA language about how they're not liable for missing anything. And if they find anything remotely suspect, including, you know, an older furnace, a sewer line with a small belly in it, the things that are actually not that uncommon and not necessarily an issue, they inevitably will just write into the inspection report that we recommend you consult with a professional subcontractor in the specialty because it's beyond the scope of our knowledge, which is nonsense, but that's the way they CYA. And then you have to make a decision. Do you want to pay for an HVAC contractor or a sewer repair company or a ephus specialty company? And when the home is known to contain ephus on the siding, it's not just contain, it is ephus. It's a system. You should expect to pay another $800 to $1,000, at least in our local market, just for that ephus inspection. And they come around and look at all the caulking. They look for any visible and obvious signs of deterioration. And they actually drill holes in the ephus and do moisture sampling. And then they fill those holes with caulk, specialty ephus caulk, by the way, not ordinary caulk. So if the ephus is installed correctly and maintained correctly with the appropriate caulk for ephus in the right places, applied well, then there's nothing wrong with an ephus-containing home, an ephus-sided home. But we often
see It's not always the case.
Yeah, and that's what happened this past weekend. So the client that we're representing has a home in Rose Hill that contains ephus. And they have gone above and beyond. He's an engineer. They've gone above and beyond to make sure the home is maintained properly. It is caulked right. When they hire contractors to work on anything, they make sure the contractors know the right standard to deal with ephus. And this includes all sorts of things like gutter kickouts. You need to be special ephus gutter kickouts. There's all these things that go with ephus. And I can assure you that home is, out of a scale of 1 to 10, is at least an 8 out of 10 when it comes to maintaining the ephus, and likely will be a 10 out of 10 before it gets listed. But now that he knows about ephus and has dealt with it for 15 years, more than 15 years, he's a little bit cautious around ephus, but it doesn't scare him because he knows what this product is, and he knows it's actually a very good product. In fact, we may want to even quote his email. It is a very good product if it's maintained correctly after it was installed correctly. But there are some downsides, and that means anytime somebody works on it, they need to know how to properly patch ephus. It is not just apply some, you know, some random fill material. You're not just throwing some Bondo on the wall and painting over it. You actually need to know how to properly deal with any intrusions, cutouts, any cutting into this material. You really need to know what you're doing. Mm-hmm. And one more piece, and this is something to think about with respect to fire. It is actually a flammable material. It's constructed of polystyrene foam, which burns. And Portland cement-based true stucco doesn't do that. I mean, everything burns if it gets hot enough, but you'd have to get really hot. Yeah. And so if you're looking at homes in the mountains and the home is ephus, that's another red flag to think about whether or not you want to take on ephus as a material. And we talk about this actually whenever we see a home that is believed to be ephus. And here's the funny thing, Hamish, you can't actually tell officially from the outside. It's sort of like knocking on a melon. You saw that in an article. If you go to a grocery store and you knock on a melon, you go to a house, you knock on the siding, if there's a sense of hollowness, a slight give when you knock, it's probably ephus. But if it doesn't do that, it feels really rock-like on your knuckles, it's probably real stucco.
Yeah, that's in line with what I just read.
Okay, that's just what I started doing and realized you can mostly tell, but we still have to apply CYA language. Like, I don't know for sure, but that sure sounds like ephus. And when there's uniformity to some of the shapes, I don't know what else to call it, on the elevation, on the outside of the house itself, when you see these shapes that trace windows that have patterns, likely that's ephus. It's something that was cut into the foam. Foam was glued under the windowsill, and now they've then plaster coated or whatever the coating is outside of the ephus to make it look like stucco. But the pattern is so perfect because it was machine made.
Mm. Yeah, where it's too good to be nature.
Well, look at a 1920s home that, you know, it does not contain ephus, does not have ephus siding. And you won't see those funky patterns and shapes on the outside of the house, but you,
right.
Because you can't do that, or they wouldn't do that with stucco, but they thought it was cool, especially in the 90s and early 2000s, to do that with ephus siding.
Yeah. I mean, then the general impression was ephus is the jam. It's the latest and greatest, right? Let's do everything we can with it.
Right. That's right. Yeah. And well, look, it makes sense in some circles. It's cheaper to install. I have not priced it out. My assumption is it's cheaper to install because builders are very cost conscious, but it also adds R value to the outside. And that's necessary to meet green building codes.
Mm.
You need energy efficiency standards. You need to meet energy efficiency standards to get your permit.
Yeah. What I'm seeing so far with just like a little bit of looking that I'm doing is it's more expensive to install. Though where it comes down is if it's residential, it's typically a lot more prone to failure. And the reason being for that is because commercial is typically concrete buildings. So with the water intrusion being on residential, you've got wood frame houses more often than not, and those rot out a lot quicker and present issues a lot sooner. Can tell me if I'm totally left field.
I don't know if you're wrong, but I have noticed a lot of cheap retail buildings appear to be sided in ephus. So mm-hmm. You walk up to like a Walgreens that's just been put up and knock on it. It's usually not real stucco, unless you're in like Florida, where it probably is stucco. And I think there's some regionalism to how common this material is. The lawsuits, I believe, started in the Southeast that gets a lot more moisture, so these problems were more evident. But here in Colorado, we're usually a dry climate.
So, and yet you've still had issues with it.
I've seen it over and over again. It is so common. And what's really interesting is, and this is subjective, but what I've noticed is that the internet, when you Google ephus, has become much more favorable to the material. And that's my UPS guy dropping off a package. Nice. So when you Google it, now what you see, the top page or two of results seem to be very positive on ephus. There's an ephus trade group. There are articles that appear to be written by ephus paid spokespeople. And I think they paid a lot of money on their SEO as an industry, present ephus in a very good light. And in some ways, it sort of reminds me of like the tobacco industry fighting tobacco regulation. And maybe it's not as bad because obviously people aren't inhaling ephus, but it to me seems like there was an ephus lobby. Yeah. Well, if it's installed correctly and it's been mm-hmm. maintained, I would buy a home with ephus, but I wouldn't buy a home without knowing what it was. And I certainly wouldn't want to put a home under contract and be surprised by the ephus. And what I keep finding are some sellers, in fact, I would say the majority of sellers would rather you didn't know it was ephus. And in fact, so I had a listing opportunity last year up in McIntosh Lake, and there are a number of what I would consider really well-built homes that are designed with perhaps people that may have mobility issues that are coming into their lives, and they're patio style homes with very little exterior maintenance and a very livable first floor with the primary bedroom on the main. And they're very close to McIntosh Lake, which is a fantastic recreational resource. They're great. In fact, we were just showing some of those units to a client's mom about a week ago. And a year ago, I was approached by a seller who wanted to list their property, and these homes are EIFS sided. And the home itself was okay. They were in the process of moving out. And I realized it was EIFS, and I said, well, let's talk about the EIFS. And he's like, he was so resistant to talking about it. Our recommendation is, look, before you list, you should do an EIFS inspection. And the EIFS inspection will tell you the recommended things to do. We have a contractor that specializes in EIFS maintenance and repairs. We will put you in touch with them. It will cost you a fraction of what it will cost you if you hide this issue and wait for the buyer to discover it. Seriously. He didn't like that. His answer to that was, I really don't want to do anything with the EIFS, which made me feel very uncomfortable. Yeah. And I gave him our presentation on what we do, and he said he'd think about it. And a couple of days later, he said no. He's chosen a different agent. That agent threw in staging in the deal, which this agent's version of staging is a handful of furniture. She keeps a small warehouse of okay looking furniture that she uses to stage. I mean, it all looks kind of dated and grubby to me. It's not staging the way we stage homes,
where we bring cash. Yeah.
An outside service provider that's the top of their game and uses current designers and stuff that looks amazing in any house and improves the marketability of any house. That's real staging, and it costs thousands of dollars. What she threw in was, you know, I like to buy furniture and keep it in a warehouse, and it sometimes works and sometimes I mean, it was really low grade, but she threw that in, which is fine. And that was his reason why he said he chose her. And I was like, okay, that's fine. But I just looked it up just to see what happened with that deal. And the market was so strong last year. So they underpriced it. They priced it low, and they got a bidding war. And it sold for significantly over the list price. And I'm not going to mention the address or the agent who was involved. But guess what's on the SPD?
Nothing. No. Or is it?
No.
Yeah, okay.
No mention of EIFS. The checkbox and just for EIFS is completely blank, and he 100% knew. I told him that's an EIFS-sided house with high probability EIFS. I mean, obviously, I didn't put a drill into it to see if foam came out, but it was definitely EIFS. So he chose the dishonest approach, in my opinion, and went with an agent who threw it. I think of this as throwing in the floor mats. This is my throwing in the floor mat story. So decades ago, I worked at a Porsche, Audi, Volkswagen, Porsche dealership. This was right out of college before I went to grad school. And for a year, I worked in sales. And, you know, I'm a car, as we've talked about often, car guy. And this couple came in and were looking at a Volkswagen and really liked it. And of course, this is a commodity product, right? This is the same as every other Volkswagen dealer can get you. And we negotiated back and forth. And I basically spent 4 hours with these people. And they said, okay, at the end of that, we're like, we're just going to think about it a little bit. And I said, okay, well, what do we do for next steps? And they said, well, we're just going to go grab some lunch. Maybe it wasn't 4 hours. I'm exaggerating. Maybe it was 2 hours. But they said, we're going to go grab some lunch. It felt like four. Maybe it was only an hour. Who knows? But it felt like forever. And it felt like I had invested a lot of time and energy. And they called me from the next dealership on their cell phone and said, look, we're really sorry. They felt so guilty. They called. We said we'd come back after lunch, but we went to the other dealership instead, and the other dealership said, we'll throw in the floor mats and match their price. And so for like $90, I lost the deal.
For floor mats, yeah.
For floor mats. And that's what this agent, that's what throwing in bad quality staging is somebody is throwing in a service that has marginal, bless you, has marginal value and gets the deal. And sometimes that's the way the world works. But I was actually, in hindsight, grateful because he was not comfortable even disclosing EIFS. And chose not to, and then sold the home in a bidding war. And hopefully that doesn't come back to bite him someday. Probably won't. But EIFS, that EIFS was showing some initial signs of degradation. And so you see it where corners meet on outside walls. It's okay. If you need to sneeze, just sneeze. You'll see the corners start to deteriorate. Where water is getting behind it, you'll start to see cracking and material falling off. And that home was just starting to show some initial signs and probably could have gotten away with some very mild ephus repair and caulking, like maybe a $3,000 bill is probably what that would have cost to address if it had been addressed proactively. The home we saw with this client this weekend in Boulder,
Instagram.
Yeah. So you'll see this home on my Instagram right now because I just couldn't believe literally is growing moldy, mossy things out of the ephus. And water is coming. Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's my Instagram handle. We can put it in the show notes and on the description. You'll see that video dated yesterday, July 9th. And we're looking at this house. And the home itself is actually a really nice house. The kitchen, the bathrooms could use some updates. But overall, it was probably 7 out of 10 in its updatedness. And probably 8 out of 10 in its function for this particular client. But their needs are for something a little bit smaller. And then what really soured the buyer, our client, was when we looked at the outside more carefully. And sure enough, right around the chimney, you could see water damage where the roof is meeting the gutter, and that's dropping into the – there's no ephus specialized kickouts for the gutter, and the water is somehow getting behind the ephus and then down that wall, and there's literally mold and moss poking out of the cracks in it, and it's just astonishing, and almost certainly that entire wall has to be taken down and then the ephus reinstalled properly, and then the gutters reinstalled with proper kickouts and verify there's no other places of damage. That was the only visible and obvious sign of failing ephus, but it was enough to say that's, you know, this could be, it could be a $35,000 or $40,000 repair bill, maybe higher. I mean, given where construction is, that $70,000 repair bill was a much larger two-story wrapped chimney wall, and that ended up being $70,000. This is in Prospect, which is a neighborhood in Longmont. Shocked the seller, shocked the listing agent. This particular wall is half the size and not two-story, so my guess is maybe $30,000 to $50,000, but unknown.
And there's been inflation and all that too.
Oh, yeah. You know? Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think that $70,000 was, I felt like we were getting taken for a ride too. I'll be honest with you. That seemed like a really high estimate, but very useful for negotiation purposes. But in reality, you know, you want to get three bids from reputable contractors. And my back of the envelope would say this is a $50,000. But they don't. So this is the other thing is that they tell you is they won't know the extent of the structural damage to the studs of the house until they rip that ephus off.
Right.
And then they're going to be able to see if there's rotted boards or not.
And you can only go so far, right, with the inspection. It's really you rip all the boards off, like you're saying.
Oh, yeah. So the specialty ephus inspection will tell you if there's moisture in the wall or not. That's basically it. And they'll also tell you whether the caulking is proper and has been maintained. Is it installed correctly? Is there caulking that's deteriorated and needs to be replaced? But they're not ripping apart the wall. The only time you're going to find out if how bad the damage is if you rip down that wall. And so this is a principles question, right? If you're confronted with a risk scenario with unknown depth to the risk, the safe thing to do is conclude the worst case, that it actually has rotted siding and wall the structural material behind that, the studs, all the way to the studs could be rotted. Do you still like the house enough to spend the money to get that fixed and deal with it? Or do you want to roll the die? And it's kind of funny. I'm back to cars all the time. I was looking at a truck online, and this truck had a Carfax, and the Carfax says sideswiped 3 years ago. No other details. And I asked the agent, what happened? Can you tell me about the car accident? Sorry, the salesperson. Can you tell me about what happened? And about half an hour later, they texted me back that their manager says, we didn't own the car then, so we don't have any knowledge of any damage whatsoever other than what's on the Carfax. I was like, well, okay, I'm not paying a premium for this vehicle anymore. Yeah. Like, I'm just going to assume it has a bent frame.
And it's
all Bondo. It's sideswiped as a serious accident, and I'm not interested anymore. At the price they're asking, which is slightly below the going rate, like maybe $2,000 below the going rate for this used truck. I was like, no longer. I just have to assume worst case scenario. There's always another house. There's always another vehicle. And these types of things, unless it's extensively understood and price adjusted for what it is, or you have to have this house, you should assume the worst case.
Without a doubt.
And that, you know, that happens to people, and it's not necessarily the wrong approach. After you've been looking at homes for a year, right, trying to find the Goldilocks house and struggling.
Fatigue.
And then you look at your resources relative to the risk of this potential issue. So let's say it's I think it's 50. Let's double it and say it's a $100,000 issue. On a $2 million house, $100,000 represents 5% of the purchase price. Is it worth overpaying by 5% plus the penalty you personally will now experience of dealing with contractors? And it is a penalty. Is it worth it for you to get this house? And sometimes the answer is yes, it's worth it. It's the right neighborhood. It's the right structure. It's the right layout. It's the right square footage. You like the neighbors, you love the design, and you want to stay married.
Mm-hmm.
So you're like,
and you're tired of looking.
I will pay minimum 50 up to $100,000 to deal with this. And maybe I'll get to bring it up in the context of our marriage whenever we have a fight from this point going forward in my little card game of things that we've done wrong. I'm just kidding.
Which is not recommended. Yep.
Not recommended. If you want to stay married, don't hold grudges. But it's pretty funny, right? Like, that's often the calculus that's going on in a buyer's head, because they actually, unlike that truck where they made tens of thousands of units, there may only be one house like this that comes on in the next 5 or 10 years.
Where it is worth it, yeah.
In the context of scarcity, houses can be fixed. They can't be relocated very easily. You can't fix location very easily, but structural issues can be addressed.
It all boils down to how much do you want it, right?
Well, I mean, I think the right kind of philosophy with our clients when we represent the buy, let's talk about that from a buy and a sell side perspective. On the buy side perspective, I just want my clients to have eyes wide open. I don't want them to get a surprise that was visible and obvious to me when they've already, I don't want them to pay for an inspection and then find out that this house has issues that could be costly to fix, or environmental issues that could impact their health. I'd rather they know about it before we write the offer, if it's visible and obvious to me. It's not always visible and obvious to me, but after over 20 years of looking at homes, a lot of homes and helping many clients buy and sell them, often what comes up on an inspection is not a surprise. We saw it. We knew about it before we even wrote the offer, because it's visible and obvious when you know what to look for. When you don't know what to look for, right, and you just shrug and you say, I don't know anything, I'm not allowed to even talk about inspections. Well, that's, you know, that's a different philosophy. And a lot of agents play that game, but we don't at House Einstein. We want you to know what's going on. So that's the buy side perspective. The sell side perspective, I want to work with people that are ethical, and they proactively address issues. They disclose what they truly know, and then they let the buyer make an educated decision. And if there's something that has affected the valuation of this property, this asset, they own it, right? They don't pretend that this didn't happen, and they don't run away with the money and move out of state and hope that no one ever calls them again. Like that. That's the world I want to live in, is where people take responsibility for their actions. And so when a client that's selling a home indicates a reluctance to fully disclose, indicates a reluctance to proactively address inspection issues, and then icing on the cake tells me they chose the other agent because they threw in the floor mats, I'm really grateful that we didn't have to make that hard call, because we were on the edge of whether this person, because they're right on the edge of ethical. Like, they're hinting that they may not be ethical, but they're not coming out right out front and saying they won't be ethical. Mm. They're kind of showing you in glimpses. And
tea leaves.
As one of my favorite gurus says, and she quotes it from Maya Angelou, I believe. She says, when someone shows you who they are, believe them the first time. And that's somebody hinting at who they are, but they're not quite showing you. So that, from my perspective, even though we lost that commission, we dodged a bullet when it came to potentially compromising our ethics and our values, because it looked like it was heading in that direction.
Yeah. And that's really a kind of a nice conclusion to it at the end, is where you step away knowing that you didn't go down this rabbit hole with somebody on this unethical business, right?
This is sort of philosophical, but what I've learned is that when I say no based on principles, and I have to sit there and look at this, right? I have to think about, well, there's money upside, there's work to be done, there's an experience to be had, but it comes with this negative thing. And if I say no, more often than not, the act of saying no to bad business opens the door to much better business with people that are ethical, do value the work we do, do listen to the advice we offer, are really happy at the end of the day with the service we provide, versus people that want to be shady and get away with something are probably not a good fit for us as clients.
Hmm. Yeah.
For me personally. And it, no, it made no, a I difference. Agree with you. Well, look, I admit that when I was younger and I was entering this business, we needed the money. And I probably would have taken anybody as a client because we needed the money and I had bills to pay and my wife wasn't working and it was stressful. And I would have taken pretty much anybody as a client. And today, I've realized how important it is to identify your principles, write them down, and live by them, and find when you're tested, the universe will test you on your principles, and you will either pass or fail those tests. And it doesn't mean that it's not like there's a flaw with young agents that don't know any better and are just hungry for the business, but they might just not know any better, or they might just be so hungry that they're willing to lie, cheat, and steal to get a deal done. Right. And I mean, I there's a commercial agent who really like in town. And I won't name him, but he had recently gotten his license and we were having a sit down. He wanted to meet with me, which is fine. I'm happy to meet with young agents entering the business. And because he's on the commercial side, there was no recruitment crossover. And he made it clear he was willing to do anything. He was going to hustle and lie, cheat, and steal as much as he needed to kill it in this business. That's all he cared about. And he was blatant about it. I personally don't think that that's a sustainable approach, but there are people that have made a lot of money lying, cheating, and stealing. The question is, can they look in the mirror at the end of the day or at themselves in the morning and feel good about it?
Do you remember Ian's car salesman?
Yeah, the guy with the real estate license as well.
Yeah.
It's actually quite easy to get a real estate license in most states. It's getting harder. I've got some theories about that. As a employing broker of a very small brokerage, we're not actively recruiting. I will consider agents that have a few years of experience and are a really good cultural fit, but I'm no longer going to take new agents. I made that decision. I don't have the bandwidth to train, mentor, and coach because the success rates are so hit or miss, and I can't seem to predict who is actually going to be successful and who's not, and who actually really lives and breathes those values day in and day out. And I don't want to coach and train competitors that don't share our values. It doesn't make sense. But if you have 3 years or more experience in the industry and you share the values that we share, you might be a good fit, but I'm not actively recruiting. But what I will say is that I think licensing standards are so low, and this is my conspiratorial talk, right? It starts with the question, why are licensing standards so low? People are investing their hard-earned nest eggs in real estate, and they're committing to this asset for an extended period of time. It's the largest investment the vast majority of people make, yet licensees that are supposed to be guiding you through this process are often very undertrained,
and less than a
licensing
year.
Licensing exams are often very easy to pass, a matter of a few weeks in some cases. I think a matter of a weekend in some states, you can get a real estate license. And the spectrum of quality is so broad. I don't think there's any other industry that has this spectrum of quality where there's a state authority that's supposedly regulating, and somebody can be a hairdresser one day and a real estate, and there's nothing wrong with hairdressers, by the way, they also are licensed, but somebody can have no skills in real estate one day and be in the real estate game the next day. And then they go out and they hang their license, as it's often called, with a well-known brokerage. Mm-hmm. And as far as I can see, none of these brokerages actually have any filter for who they take. I mean, back in 2000, 5 when I left Windwalker on Nantucket and looked for a brokerage here in Boulder, and we interviewed with a bunch, none of them were asking any questions regarding our qualifications to be a real estate agent whatsoever. All they cared was that we could pay their desk fees.
Yeah, the office handled fee.
And we're okay with the splits. That's all. And then they offered us, here's your sign packages. Here's the things that you can buy from us as a brokerage. But none of them were concerned with the quality of service we would actually offer the clients at all. And that's why I say these places are built to take new agents that will sell to their friends and family for 2 or 3 years. And then they'll run out of friends and family and they'll be out of the business. And 70 to 80% of agents that enter exit within that 3-year period. And the large brokerages don't seem to care because they've got fancy brands and that's what their business is built on.
No reason to keep them on either, right?
Right. I mean, they're happy to have a couple of star performers and then the rest of the agents, the vast majority of agents in that brokerage are not high performers. It's a part-time job for them. And so, so when it comes to licensing and choosing an agent, you just have to understand how this industry really works. And that's why I often recommend make friends with the title company and know who the top closer is. If you really want to know who's a really good agent, interview some escrow officers at title companies because they're the ones that deal with the incompetency day in and day out. And they may have a buddy that they're sending you business to. And you can ask, is this like a personal friend of yours? Why are you recommending this person? But they deal with so many bad agents that they really know the difference.
Mm-hmm. And you can tell. So Osman, my question to you, how are we going to circle this back to EFIS?
Oh, well, that's a great question. How did we end up way over here? Well, EFIS is one of those things on the buy or sell side. So what's the ethical behavior for a seller? It's to address the issues up front. It's to do an EFIS inspection proactively. It's to actually execute the recommended maintenance from the EFIS inspection and then hand it on a due diligence silver platter to the potential buyer. And the buyer can go get their inspections too, but there shouldn't be any surprises because you've already right. dealt with all of that. And in theory, really, you should consider getting your buyer to sign off on EFIS before you accept their offer because you're that way you're not tainting your listing with somebody that's just treating the deal as a zero cost option, right? They put it under contract only to lock it down for a week or 10 days, but they really just want that time to keep shopping without, losing anything. And that costs you a lot of money as a seller. So, you know, having that discussion with the buy side agent, if you're the listing side agent on the buyer and making sure they're comfortable with EFIS can be a little tricky. Because you don't want to necessarily write out, buyer acknowledges home is EFIS clad and agrees is not an issue for their purchasing decision. Like if you wrote that into an amendment or a counter,
what a red
it
flag.
Would scream red flag city, right? Like wouldn't that scare the heck out of a buyer? Oh, so it's a very tricky, it's a tricky issue to navigate when you're on the sell side.
Yeah.
And ultimately, you are the one that the real estate commission sides with the buyer. That's usually how it goes. The contract is written to protect the buyer, and it's generally perceived as a seller risk if the buyer terminates. In theory, both sides are acting in good faith, and it's very difficult to prove one side is not acting in good faith. But at the end of the day, it's still a game of trust, irrespective of what the hell the contract says.
I think maintenance is the huge one, right? Especially if you're a seller. If you're maintaining it, then you have everything to back up that there shouldn't be anything wrong. Not that you're guaranteeing it, but you've dotted your I's, you've crossed your T's. You're aware of what you have, and it can be a benefit. You get some R value out of it, but you really need to make sure that you're on top of the schedule, making sure you see things before they happen. You know, little cracks.
It's just like so many other environmental issues. Mm-hmm. It could just like mold, just like lead-based paint or asbestos or radon,
a
or
wet
aluminum
basement.
Wiring.
Yeah.
Or a high water table and a sump pump or not. Mm-hmm. There are all these, you know, homes are, and then there's progression of time issues. Like homes built in the late 1800s with brick foundations can still be quite solid. even though sometimes they get a little damp in the basement, versus homes that were built on fieldstone foundations, which, you know, constantly need attention. And the ultimate solution is to lift it out of the earth and pour a new foundation. Or homes built in the early 2000s that, in theory, have way better energy efficiency, but they're also very airtight, which results in more mold issues and fresh air issues, mm-hmm. right? Like, I mean, a home built in the early 2000s that's got a gas stove, I would be more concerned with the benzene in the air than a home built in the early 1900s with lead-based paint. I mean, take your pick. It just, all of these issues
there's typically always something. Progress it.
There's always something, but they typically progress in one direction, and that's more concern. And then the questions become, well, how is it mitigated? What's the real health risk? What are the financial costs? What are the impacts on resale? And all part of the matrix that should go into your purchase decision.
Yeah. Huge. I had a lead-based paint on mine and pretty much just ignored that personally. You know, and encapsulation is typically the go-to on that one, and I only plan to do that, so.
Right. Yeah. Well, that's the vast majority. I've never had a buyer terminate a deal based on lead-based paint. I have had buyers decide they don't want to deal with it, and then we only look at homes built from 1979 and newer, and usually I just say make it 1980 and newer, and then you're far less likely to get lead-based paint. And usually it comes into play when you take a reciprocating saw to... Yeah. To the drywall.
Once you atomize,
take a power
it, right?
tool to the drywall, you're all that micro dust is now in the air and getting inhaled. But lead has been everywhere. Most of us have grown up in homes with lead based paint. Lead was in fuel. It was in our air. But now we know better. So if you're going to buy a home built before 1980, you better choose contractors that actually adhere to EPA lead mitigation standards when they're working on the home. Mm-hmm. And you'd be shocked how few do.
Oh, I bet. And then there's like a shade tree kind of theories, right? Where it's like, oh, well, if you hold your breath and then open a window, you'll be okay.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Not at all. But you know, you hear people.
That did not.
I'm not recommending that. Not in the slightest.
Okay, just to be clear,
yeah, I'm saying
holding your breath is not no, the answer.
No, contractors that would say that, right? You want somebody that actually adheres. So, I think we've
have beat we exhausted the horse on this one.
Have we?
Yeah. I mean, it's a potential. It's, I don't know. In some ways, it's such an interesting topic in real estate. It scares people. It sounds like an STD. You got a bad case of the EPHIS.
Right.
And yet it actually isn't that bad, but you really, I think it's a go or no-go decision before you look at homes. Like if EPHIS is not going to work for you, a well-maintained home with EPHIS is not going to work because you can't stand EPHIS, we shouldn't bother even looking at homes with EPHIS. And so when we see a home that clearly got what looks like stucco on the outside, a phone call to the listing agent, which then results in a phone call to the seller, which might result in the SPD being correctly filled out, is a better use of time than driving to go look at a house and wasting hours to see this home that at the end of the day is never going to work because it's got EPHIS siding.
Right. Yeah. And that's where kind of the disclosure side of it rolls in, right? Where everybody should kind of know about it, know about its existence. And that's what we've hoped to do with this podcast.
Yeah, well, that's one of the goals of our business and of the podcast is to help you understand, to educate you to make a smarter real estate decision and to think about the future. Because you will have to, unless you remove the EPHIS and side it with something different, you will have to disclose EPHIS, at least in the state of Colorado, it's on the seller's property disclosure. If you buy a home with a structural repair, or needs a structural repair and you make one, guess what? You're going to have to disclose the home had a structural issue and you correctly repaired it when you go to sell the home. There's no escaping this disclosure, and people try, and likely all they're doing is massively increasing their liability for themselves. And by the way, and I'll add this piece, the agent in Colorado, buy or sell side, is required to proactively disclose material defects. EPHIS is not a material defect, but if they see a material defect and they don't tell their buyer, that's a breach of the regulations in Colorado for the real estate commission. You are required to tell your buyer
anything you see
problem.
Yeah.
But so few agents do. So few agents do. It's so funny.
Our private walkthroughs are a bunch of fun. I'll let you fill in kind of what our private walkthroughs consist of. But I filmed a small 7-minute one of just my house today, kind of send over to my mom and everything. And I slipped into that. So I was walking through my own house and I was like, oh, that needs caulking and that needs work. And, you know, I was trying to show it off and I ended up like kind of making a journal of maintenance items.
Yeah. Well, so what Hamish is talking about is that when we represent relocation buyers, and this is only for buyers that are under a buyer agency agreement, we will schedule a video tour of the home, and we will personally go through the house and point out what's right and what's wrong that we can see. And these videos can be an hour long, which is longer than a normal showing.
Yeah,
easily be an hour long. And it's sort of funny. It's in some ways, I feel like our goal there is to talk the buyer out of it, because the last thing I want to have happen is I've got them excited enough to hop on a flight and then they come out to look at the home and it turns out the home is not acceptable, or because of something visible and obvious that we should have known, or they even write a contract to buy the home and now they fly out on an inspection and find out the home has issues that are unacceptable. And so we usually have those videos turned around in under a day, and they are really detailed. And if you are considering buying from another state here in Colorado, or even if you're local, we're happy to show you these videos. We no longer publish them online because, frankly, they feel like an invasion of privacy on someone's home. And we don't want to embarrass people for the condition of their houses. You might see clips without disclosure of which address, whose house this is, when it was even filmed, because it's educational, but you won't see the actual address of the full house on any of our recent public content. Yeah. Maybe a few years old on House Einstein. You might still see some old videos, but the new videos are way higher quality. Gimbaled cameras, much more detail, much more thorough, and a service we provide to buyers who are shopping to relocate to Boulder and Denver and the whole Front Range, really.
Absolutely. Yeah, it's cool seeing our content just keep getting better and our service expanding.
It's fun to grow a business, and it's fun to grow an ethical business. It often presents challenges, and coming back to the principle that guides the decision is whenever the decision is like, oh, what do we do in this circumstance? There's usually a principle or two that are in play, and kind of chewing on those are how I personally find I make better decisions.
Absolutely. I also feel I can sleep better at night a little bit when it's ethical, you know, when you're not doing the wrong thing, you don't have to worry because you knew you did the right thing. Yeah, it helps.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, one last thing I want to add is that I remember reading about a lawsuit recently where a seller did not disclose an issue and their answer was, well, they repaired it. So they don't have to disclose repaired issues. And in Colorado, the SPD, the seller's property disclosure, now has some language around, has it ever had this issue? Not just does it currently have this issue? And I'm pretty sure that was a response to the lawsuit where somebody decided not to disclose a major issue because they thought they had fixed it, when in fact they had not fully fixed it. They did some half-ass repair, and it turned out that it wasn't correctly repaired at all, and they should have disclosed it. And after that, I think that's why that form got updated. But
yeah.
One last piece, not everything's on that seller's property disclosure, especially death. There's no requirement for sellers to disclose a murder, a homicide, a suicide. These things happen in life. People die of natural causes too. None of that has to be disclosed on a seller's property disclosure, but it often affects people's purchase decision. And the only way you really know is to talk to some of the neighbors, but even then they may not even know.
It's called like a psychological defect or something, the term for it. Yeah.
Something like that. But in Colorado, it's not a required disclosure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I remember that coming up on my test and thinking, oh, cool. Yeah, it doesn't really bother me either way. And I was like, cool, we'll get ghosts out of here. You know,
it bothers me a little bit. I feel like, look, I'm not really frightened by that. I think that This is a kind of a weirdly personal topic, but people do have spiritual beliefs, and you know, maybe it's because I grew up with poltergeists or with a family of faith. Maybe that's why I have these beliefs, but maybe there is an energy attached to a home after somebody passed away, or maybe, you know, we all just blink out. Who knows what really happens? But my mother would definitely be very, very upset if she bought a house not knowing somebody died in it. Mm. She would say that there's probably ways to bless the home and cleanse the home spiritually. And there are stories out there of real estate listings that weren't going anywhere until they hired a shaman to bless the house, and suddenly the house got interest. I personally know
I've heard of those, an agent
in town that shares that story. So I think it's better to just be respectful of other people's spiritual beliefs. And I don't know if somebody approached me with a home or somebody had passed away, I would follow their lead, right? If they don't want it disclosed, we won't disclose it, because it's not required. But as a buyer, I would still want to know. And some more practical and rational people would probably say, look, people die all the time. There's billions of people on the planet. People die in structures. That's what happens. That's life. But the irrational part of me still says, you should probably mention it. I don't know. I would follow my client's lead.
Yeah.
I would say, and I think I did have, now that my memory is getting jogged on this, I did have a deal where there had been a death. And we did go under contract. And prior to the inspection period elapsing, my seller said it was okay to go ahead and let them know. And I did. And they hit the pause button for 24 hours. And then they came back and said, we're going to continue with the deal.
Whoa.
But it gave them pause. And that's how I remember that deal going. I don't even remember the address. This is 2007 or 2008. It's years and years ago. And that's how we handled it. And it was my client's decision to handle it that way. And I asked them how they wanted to proceed, because it's one of these very touchy subjects. And because it's not a requirement, it's not considered an actual defect, I'm not required to disclose it. Although it clearly makes me a little uncomfortable not disclosing it, but mm-hmm. I would do whatever my client wanted to do in that circumstance.
Right. Yeah, it makes sense. I was going to say, do you request it in the due diligence documents? You know,
if it's somebody for them which that matters, yeah. You can ask. You may want to ask in writing. I don't know if you would ever have any legal ground to use that as an excuse for terminating a contract. I don't think you would in Colorado.
That's a good point. Hey, for curiosity's sake.
Yeah, right? I just want to know. Yeah. So this is one of those, there have been cases, right? I know one personally in South Boulder where there was a tragic murder-suicide. And it's a horrific situation, a horrible story.
Yeah.
And I don't know the address of the house. The JonBenét story, they've changed the address of the house. And I wouldn't buy that house for any price because of the notoriety mm-hmm. that house has, the constant gawkers that come by and knock on the door. And
I was going to say, especially with the popularity of these murder podcasts, these true crimes.
Yeah, if it was a crime of any notoriety, I would not recommend you buy that house. The weirdo magnet factor is super rare, but you don't want to buy a house that's a magnet for weird people to come snooping around your house.
Not at all.
Yeah. Okay, well, that's a fun ending for this podcast.
Yeah.
I think that we've covered it with respect to EFIS. We somehow have gone from EFIS to tragic murder-suicides. They're definitely not on the same scale. of potential issues. And the funny thing is, the Real Estate Commission says murder-suicide isn't even an issue, and EFIS is, and must be disclosed on the seller's property disclosure. So welcome to the wild and wacky world of real estate, I suppose. And our mission at House Einstein is to help you make a smarter real estate decision. I think we've talked about our principles and our values and how we do that with our clients. If you're looking for us on the web, you'll find us at houseeinstein.com. We have an amazing team here in Boulder and Denver, and now we're in Breck, and we're headed into Grand County as well. And we'd love to hear from you. So if you're looking for us, that's where you will find our contact information, houseeinstein.com. Anything to add, Hamish?
Just thanks for watching and listening.
Thanks, everybody. We'll catch you next time.